It's Friday, February 26th, I believe is correct. And we're looking at the overhead entitled General Mechanism of Vesicle Targeting, Protein Details. And we that means that we are looking at some of the details of this, of the proteins we already mentioned before in dealing with the vesicle effusion with the presynaptic membrane, and also some of the terms used in the ER to Golgi apparatus membrane movement. And we stopped, and I believe this is where the test stops. Is that correct?
No, stop.
Stop. I don't think this is on it at all, is it? Yeah. So this is not on at all, despite the fact that you're going to see some of the words here, some of the detail, some of the same terms in the overhead, in the review sheet. So let's take a look at what a snap is. A snap. Oh, snap. Now, my son uses that term as kind of like a gentle curse word. Oh, snap, or snap. Where does that come from? Where did that come from? You have any idea? Was there a song? I got the impression it came from a song. At any rate, so the snaps are called soluble NSF attachment proteins. So they've done enough cell biology work to know that there is a set of assistant proteins to NSF that enable the protein to dock with the vesicle to the target membrane. They were originally discovered in bovine brain tissue because they apparently have a lot of it going on in there, and you can get bovine brain tissue very, very, very easily and very cheaply because they've got a lot of brains they don't know what to do with in the slaughterhouse. Turns out to be a fairly large family. There's an alpha snap, a beta snap, a gamma snap. There's probably more snaps that's listed. Okay, so what do you need to know out of all this in detail here? First of all, you need to know that there's a whole family of them, and the terms that they use, that they're soluble as well. Let's see here. What else is going to be truly important to recall in terms of a functional assay? Well, that's actually about it. I mean, the details of the of this, the alpha, the snaps, aren't that operationally important. I mean, they're kind of interesting, but they're not that operationally important. So we're going to just have you look at those three items, and we're going to go on. Did you have to, were there some things to fill in that I didn't give you a chance to fill in? Any blanks that need to be filled in there? Or did you get them all filled in? Okay. All right. There weren't very many, were there? I didn't think so. At any rate, let's go on and take a look then at page 2. Page 2 is perhaps, it contains a few more interesting things. And that is these V snares and T snares. Now, here you begin to see immediately where you've got this problem in terms of the same protein getting a different terminology. So here on the top of page 2. Of the handout called General Mechanism of Vesicle Targeting Protein Details. And we're looking at V-snares, and notice immediately what's in parentheses there. The V-snares are also called synaptobrevins, and if you're dealing with some other tissues, they're called VAMPs, vesicle-associated membrane proteins, VAMPs. So the a V-snare is a putative snap receptor. Now, the word putative in this case means accused. is thought to be. There is still some uncertainty if it is. Putative. Suspected, exactly. Another nice synonym. Suspected. Strongly suspected. SNAP receptor, V-snare, that interacts with the synaptic plasma membrane protein, syntaxin. And that syntaxin is a part or a component of the target snare or T-snare. So this first line right here, that's important. And notice in the nerve cell, that's important. The T-snare consists of syntaxin and SNAP25. let's see what else. What the other interesting thing here is, well, I don't know how interesting it is. I think in terms of operational information, that's probably all we need to be able to get from this. These other things, again, are interesting tidbits, but not worth asking about because some of these details will change. Then we have these coat proteins called COPs, and we've seen those already, called codomer complexes. And typically, as it says here, it's a complex of 7 polypeptides. Now, I don't need for you to know the 7 peptides, okay? The alphas, the betas, and their weight. I mean, please. That's probably changed anyway over the couple years since I wrote this up. It is interesting, however, about this, and that is that mammalian alpha COP is homologous to the yeast sec 21P. Here you see a situation in which you have the same protein function being described using a different name because it was in a different organism. So COP is found in mammalian cells, typically complex animals like cows and humans, whereas the SEC21 does the exact same thing in yeast, the yeast. So you need to be able to link those two in terms of that connection. Then we go on and we're going to take a look at the ARFs. And, of course, you need to know what the ARF stands for, ADP ribosylation factor. And you need to know that it's a structurally and functionally conserved family of GTP proteins. And we also know that true ARFs are known to act as cofactors in the cholera toxin catalyzed ADP ribosylation of the GSA subunit, and it also rescues the lethal double mutant ARF1 ARF2 in yeast. That's kind of like a secondary idea there. So you can say, and also rescues the double lethal double mutant ARF1, ARF2 in yeast. So ARF proteins were first discovered as cofactors in that cholera toxin manipulation of your G protein alpha subunit. So that's important to know. There are 5 ARF proteins in humans and 2 ARF in yeast and about 12 ARF-like proteins in a variety of other species. You don't need to know that because that's probably changed. However, we do know that ARF proteins are concentrated around the Golgi apparatus. And then current models, and notice current models, that their models may have changed, probably not, but they are regulators that coat protein assembly. And we saw that earlier in that previous figure and in the caption of that, in which the ARF was either GTP or GDP connected, and whether it was GTP or GDP altered its function. Let's see here. The other thing is interesting, and this is just a trivial tidbit, but it is unique in that it's unique in having near absolute dependence on phospholipids, at least for in vitro activity. Okay. And then we need to know that the codimer assembly, which we talked about earlier, and the codimer disassembly is initiated when GDP-bound forms of ARF bind to its receptor protein, and its disassembly is initiated when ARF is triggered to hydrolyze the bound GDP. This comment is, you know, we've seen that before. We saw that before in the figure dealing with the Golgi apparatus and the ER to Golgi apparatus. Now, one of the proteins, a set of proteins we really haven't talked too much about, are called the Rab proteins. And the Rab proteins actually are a family of proteins that are linked with membrane movement in the cell. Rab proteins. And you'll see in the next figure that there's actually a fairly large set of Rabs. And the Rab proteins, so mammalian cells, as it says here, express a large number of low molecular weight GTP binding proteins. And these are called simply Rab proteins. I don't know where the Rab came from. Could be the initials of somebody's professor or something. And they are associated with the subcompartments of the regulated exocytic pathway. In other words, that if you're going to release something, secrete something in the cell, it many times it's packaged in a membrane-bound vesicle and then released as that vesicle fuses to the membrane. That process of the creation of the membrane and its fusion, all the many steps necessary for that, have some Rab proteins involved with it. And as it says here, and this is an important one, and I'll put a little exclamation point there for you so you make sure you know it, all function, all Rab proteins, whatever they've described a Rab protein and been able to accurately label it as a Rab, they've discovered that the Rabs are specific regulators of intracellular traffic. And again, here we have the situation. I'm not going to ask you to recall it. I simply want you to make a mental note of it, but you will not be required to know it. That again, here's another situation in which the Rab proteins in some mammalian cells are called by a different name in a different species. In this case, again, it's in yeast. Yeast is a model species because they're so easily used, so easily manipulated, grown in large numbers. They have many eukaryotic characteristics. So there's a lot of people intensively studying yeast for a variety of membrane-related structures and movements and stuff. All right, well, we can go on with that. Now, what I have to do is I have to make sure I have my these overheads with me when I write the test so that I know what I've said that I'm going to make you know. Because I have done that in such a way that I've forgotten to do that, and then I've asked questions over stuff I didn't ask you to. Well, you know I do that sometimes. So I've got to be more careful with this test, because I'm not going to be here for this test, you understand. Do I need to go through the schedule for next week or so? Should I go through that again? Perhaps I should, just to verify it. Okay, so this is a model. It says, notice that when it says scheme or schematic, it means that, you know, this is... None of this stuff at this point is absolute, but it seems to indicate that you've got this model. It seems to indicate the ER to Golgi, the trans-Golgi network, to the plasma membrane, to secretion, all along those steps of apparent movement. And if you recall, did I tell you about my Pilati story? Dr. Pilati? And that is his name. Not Pilates. It's not the exercise thing. It's Pilates. He was the guy who got the Nobel Prize for, in the 60s it was, for marking a protein and watching it go through the ER, the Golgi, the trans-Golgi network into the plasma membrane. Up until the 1960s, they hadn't known about how that process worked, which is hard to believe that I'm that old, that a significant scientific discovery occurred while I was born. I keep daydreaming about, you know, Boyle's Law and Charles' Law. Those are the ones I relate to, not the ones that happened to me while I was alive or happened while I was alive. Ah, never mind. I'm rattling on. So, here you go. So, they seem to have said that this family of Rabs, as I mentioned earlier, are linked to the endocytotic process of secretion, within the cell process of secretion. And we've mentioned these earlier before. The details here are not important. I'm not going to ask you to regurgitate this in terms of the Rab1 and 2A and all that nonsense. I'm simply saying I want you to note and be able to describe in a brief way what the role of Rab proteins are in the cell, and that you've got this figure to help remember that for you. Now, so, for example, I just picked one out and just mentioned something about it, primarily because they have linked Rab3. So the Rab3 with the idea that it serves as a regulator of the snare complex formation. So Rab3 is associated with synaptic vesicle membranes and serves as a regulator of the snare complex. Now, SEC1 is another protein not related to Rabs at all. SEC1. Again, since it's labeled like this, this thing is a yeast. This comes from yeast. Whoa, spell it out. This is a yeast. Perhaps I should stand in a different direction so I don't write it upside down for you. Although I do like standing there. So this is a yeast. See, because I like standing there because I'm not in your way. If I was transparent, it would be a lot easier, right? I am translucent. In other words, that you can see parts of me because my skin is so pasty white. But at any rate, that's a different issue. Now, so... notice SEC1, specifically known as NSEC1, also known as MUNC 18. Notice this. Monkey, another kind of things, just simply want you to know the idea that that particular protein, the NSEC1, is a hydrophilic protein that has a high affinity for syntaxin, which is a part of the snare complex. Let's take a look at what syntaxin is. Syntaxin. Again, we don't know a whole lot about the details. Okay. All right. Syntaxin, what we need to know is that it's closely associated with the SNAP25 integral protein. That's about all we need to know. That's all we can know. Because, again, the work on this is still ongoing, and it's probably what I would teach you now would not be probably relevant or current 6 months from now. So we do know, what we do know is that it's associated with the SNAP25, and that's what we basically need to recall. So syntaxin and that. Synaptotagamin protein family. Notice again, here's another idea. It's also known as a P65 protein family. All right. It is an integral membrane glycoprotein. Now, this is kind of interesting that it's a glycoprotein because that means it probably has something to do with sitting on the outside of the cell. If you recall the fundamental rules of glycoproteins, if they're an integral protein, the part that's outside the cell typically is glycosylated, and the part that's inside the cell is not. And for 99.99% of the proteins that are integral proteins on the surface of the cell, that's an absolute, that it's the outside, in the intermembrane region, that's got the carbohydrate on it, and it's not in the interior of the cell. So it's integral membrane glycoprotein, which means, of course, that probably the stuff that's outside, facing outside and on the outside of the cell is the glyco part of it. It's present typically in synaptic vesicles and secretory granules. And that's about it. We don't need about protein kinase C and phospholipase A2. Again, I apologize for my thick speaking. I've managed to bite my tongue yesterday, and now it just hurts when I talk sometimes. And let's see here. Last little bit. Synaptotagamin. Recent studies suggest that blah, 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 blah. Okay. In the luminal portion. Now, N-glycosylated luminal portion, that presumes this is, when I say luminal portion, this is the luminal portion of the ER. ER. In other words, it's the luminal portion of the ER that eventually is exposed on the surface of the cell. It's the luminal portion of the ER that's eventually exposed in the ER. Let's do a little model here. Would you mind doing me a favor? Would you mind just putting your arms like that? Thank you. Now, we're going to pretend that she is an ER, endoplasmic reticulum, where the inside here is the luminal portion of the ER, and the outside here is the cytoplasm of the ER. Got it? Okay. So what happens is that, and I'm going to join you for a moment, what happens here is that the ER, if you're going to secrete a vesicle, so my hands are now part, and my palms are facing inward toward her, toward the lumen. And according to what it says here, the materials on the inside, and I'll illustrate this with the blue pen and the blue part of the pen. There's an integral protein here, and it penetrates to the membrane, but the blue part is the glycosylated part. If it's in the lumen of the ER, like this, that means as this, I bleb off and form a vesicle, thank you very much, I now have that part of it in the inside. Is that correct? As I travel through the cell and I merge with the plasma membrane over here and I fuse with it, as I fuse with it, guess what part's pointing outward? The glycosylated part. So that's the rationale for having that comment, is to remind you of how the mechanics of vesicle formation and formation from the ER and fusion with the plasma membrane allows for the glycosylated pieces to be the interior of the lumen of the ER. Okay. Well, all right. So, interestingly enough, we'll simply say this. With monoclonal antibodies available for this protein, synaptotagamin is used for a marker for synaptic vesicles and nerve terminals. So if you can't tell if it's a synaptic vesicle, you hit it with the monoclonal antibody, which is specific, laser-like specific for that particular protein. And if it marks it, that means it's a vesicle. And finally, this synaptotagamin is obviously, then, since it's related with synaptic vesicles and terminals, it's widespread throughout the central nervous system and the peripheral nervous system. Okay. Now then, that means, ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to do is we're going to pause for a moment, and we're going to take a look at what's going to happen in terms of the class over the next week or so. And if you would remind me, you do have this particular handout, is that correct? It's called Responses of Postsynaptic Cells to Neurotransmitters. You have this? Yeah. What that means is next time we start, and we just might start today, next time we start, we'll start with this. Okay? Will you remind me of that? Thank you very much. Now, let's do a quick review again. We are going to have, and where in the world? Oh, okay, good. We are going to have a lecture on Monday, is that correct? Because I'm going to be here. So Monday is March what? I think it's 1st, isn't it? Monday, 3:10, and so we'll have a lecture. Is that correct? Then Wednesday, 3:10, is we'll have the test. And this test will be over chapters, if I recall, 23 to 24, because now 23 to 24, if you recall, I had a single handout for that. Then we had a chapter 25, which is the amino acids, and then we began with the neurotransmitter. And so the neurotransmitter part of that was basically I'm going to call it chapter 10. Do you recognize this, that synaptic transmission and cellular signaling? Do you remember seeing that? Called it chapter 10. Remember this? I think that's the first one we started with. Is that right? From the amino acids? Don't everybody speak at once. Do you have this?
Yeah.
Yeah, you do have it. Right. And this is going to be tested. You'll be tested over this. And I'll tell you exactly what... I think I've got a review for that part of it. And then we went from that, and that was an extensive series of overheads, if I recall. We go from that, and then we went into... I believe we went into then the general mechanism of vesicle targeting and fusion. Is that correct? Was that the next overhead?
Overview of the neuron
structure. Okay, let me see which that is. Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. I don't have that here. You're right. All right. So, here, let me get that correct. There is a chapter 10, but before that, there was this overview. Thank you for reminding me. Yeah, and then we did synaptic transmission. See that one? Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. So, overview of neuron, what did I call it? Oh, neuron what? And I don't think I've spelled neuron right. Oh, well. So, you got this, you got that, you got this, you got this, and then you've got part of, you know, only, and that's literally the first part. First part of that general mechanism. All right, now Friday. Friday, that is what, 3:07? No, Friday would be 3:05:10. 5:06:07. So Monday, no, that can't be right. 6:07. Is Monday the 8th? Monday the 8th? Is it? Sure, it feels like it, doesn't it? All right. I want to make sure I get this right, just to make sure. And today's the 26th, isn't it? And therefore, okay. So Monday's the 1st, that's the 3rd. Friday's the 5th, Monday's the 8th. And these two, there's going to be no lectures. And we'll make that time up by extending some additional times in some of the following times. Now, as well, there's going to be some additional days in April that I'm not going to be able to be around. So we'll have at least two more days in which we'll have either somebody coming in substituting, or we'll have to manage it in a different form. So these 2 days, and then another 2 days in April, probably. All right, so then Monday on the 8th, if you recall, the lab, we've moved and combined with the 3:26:10 lab. Is it the 26th is a Monday? Or is it 23rd? Combined with the 22nd, I think, is what we did. All right, because the 22nd, we missed the 8th because I'm not here. Then the 22nd is the next time we meet because of spring break. Does it make sense? Somebody following along? All right. Good. But we are having lab this Monday, tomorrow, this coming Monday. And it's lab number 7, which deals with gel filtration chromatography, and it's in your textbook. You need to be aware of it. It's a very handy thing. Okay. It's going to be a fun lab because it's a very powerful technique it's easy to learn. And it's common. All these techniques that you're learning have direct consequence in today's labs. Okay, today's labs. I know I go up to Grand Rapids and do these sophisticated microarray technology things and these $200,000 instruments, and yet one of the fundamental questions that we always ask is, how much protein am I putting on the things? And so off I go doing a Bradford reagent protein assay. It's kind of fun. All right. Let's take a look. Does everybody have one of these review sheets? Okay. I'm sorry, what? You need another one? Oh, okay. Are you? La da 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 da. There you go. All right. So let's take a look. Chapter 23 and 24. Again, this is now the fatty stuff. If you remember the Oreos and things, that's what we did. And so it simply says, outline the process in detail by which dietary fats enter the lymph and blood systems. And that's like the first page of that. Then compare and contrast the various lipoproteins and their characteristics. How is fatty acids released from the proteins? What did Knoop's experiment in 1904 prove about fatty acid metabolism, and how did he prove it? Outline the process in detail which fatty acids are eventually transported to the mitochondria. Now, this, of course, deals with its activation by acetyl-CoA, or its activation by ATP and CoA, so it becomes a fatty acyl-CoA. Now, what are the four enzymes of the saturated fat oxidation metabolism? What do they do? Now, this is different. I don't need for you to memorize a pathway, but then again, I do. So there are four enzymes in that pathway. They do specific things in a specific order. I'm not going to ask you to memorize them in terms of drawing it out, but you might as well anyway, because the kind of detail I could ask about that question almost would require you to have a mental image at least of it. It's really fascinating enzyme. It contains, of course, my favorite enzyme. Is that right? This pathway contains my favorite enzyme?
Every enzyme seems to be your favorite enzyme.
I know. I love that methylmalonyl mutase too. And why do I love that methylmalonyl mutase? What is it? Vitamin B12, yes. It's one of the two functions of vitamin B12. Okay, what happens when the body runs into an unsaturated fatty acid, at least with some of them? What do they have to do? What does the body have to do to those saturated fatty acids? Yeah, that's right. It has to move the double bonds in the correct position. Exactly correct. Recall that synthesis, catabolism, the three ketone bodies. Now that's going to require some memorization. Unfortunately, it's short, but it also contains HMG CoA reductase. Do you remember that HMG CoA reductase? Why is HMG CoA? It's one of my favorite enzymes. just to tease people, you see. So, anyway, why is HMG CoA reductase interesting? And we'll continue on that. Describe in general. Describe in detail how the cell separates the fatty synthesis and oxidation pathways. So, if you remember, there's a diagram there that lists a physical separation and other types of separation that contrast between oxidation and anabolism. It's in that list. You need to be able to discuss that with some clarity. Describe in general how the cells synthesize fatty acids of acetyl-CoA through malonyl-CoA. Now, when it says describe in general, what I'm basically saying is that this. Please don't memorize the pathway or the enzyme names. But here's the pieces of information that I think are relevant in this. And that is that the process begins, of course, with acetyl-CoA. The acetyl-CoA is modified with another carbon by using bicarbonate to make malonyl-CoA. And it's actually, in fact, the malonyl-CoA that provides the two carbon units to lengthen the growing fatty acid tail every round. Well, how can a three-carbon unit add two carbon units? Well, by adding that third carbon to acetyl-CoA, you kind of activate the acetyl-CoA and make it a higher energy compound so that it can use that extra energy to bond, as it were, to the growing fatty acid tail by losing the carbon dioxide. So the addition and the elimination of the carbon dioxide is an energy process to help encourage the production of these fatty acids. Then all you need to say is that fatty acid synthesis is essentially the reverse of fatty acid oxidation. Fatty acid synthesis is essentially the reverse of fatty acid oxidation. It's where you have this. When you add the fatty acid, the two carbons to the growing carbons, you get an alcohol. It eliminates the alcohol to form a double bond, and then NADPH comes in and reduces that double bond to single bonds, and there you got your fatty acid. That's all that is, if you look at it. So it's almost exact reverse of fatty acid oxidation. How would fatty acid metabolism regulated in the liver cell? There is an elaborate figure that deals with that, that shows the liver and malonyl-CoA reductase and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Recall some of the intermediates that synthesize cholesterol, and what role does HMG-CoA reductase play in the regulation of cholesterol metabolism? There's a specific series of comments about HMG-CoA reductase. And if you recall, I asked you to be able to identify the compounds that are linked with the cholesterol metabolism. So if I said farnesyl, would you say yay or nay to being a part of the cholesterol metabolism?
Say yay.
Yay, yeah. Yeah. I'll have to either make up some, to give you some good distractors, I'm going to have to make up some convincing but wrong compounds. Woohoo! All right, and describe in detail the cellular processes that uptake LDLs and break them down. So that is the last figure in chapter 23-24 handout. Chapter 25 deals with the amino acids and proteins. Describe in detail how proteins are degraded in the cell. The S26, what is that? S26 is a protein that's a part of what pathway for protein destruction. Do you remember? They tag the proteins with some compound called ubiquitin. That's correct. S26 or 26S protein is a part of the ubiquitin process for breaking down cells, breaking down proteins in cells. Describe how a nitrogen pool is created in the cell. That's where you get the transaminases, etc. And the pool of nitrogen ready for urea cycle is held by what two compounds? For nitrogen. You're thinking of carbon. That's a very good thought, but it's actually incorrect. We're talking about nitrogen ready to go into the urea cycle. There are two amino acids that act as pools for that. Aspartate and glutamate, or asparagine and glutamine, are the two pools. So how is the urea cycle regulated? I'm not asking you to recall the urea cycle. Just how it's regulated. But the regulation process is there's only about three or four lines, a couple sentences that deal with that. There is a specific enzyme that produces a specific compound that does the regulation, and you need to be able to tell me that. What are the entry points and exit points for amino acids from the citric acid cycle? I think I asked you to know some of them, if not all of them. Also, would you add to this on that particular line ketogenic and or glucogenic amino acids? Ketogenic and glucogenic amino acids. There are some amino acids that lend themselves to making sugars. There are some amino acids that lend themselves to making fats. And you need to be able to tell me which does which. Now, you've got to compare and contrast the roles of SAM. What does SAM stand for? Yes. And THF, what does that stand for? Tetrahydrofolate, that's right. Now, SAM, of course, has only got one oxidation state, and that's the methyl group. THF has at least four oxidation states. So the comparison and contrast is they're both one carbon sources for biosynthesis, but SAM only has one oxidation state, the methyl group, whereas THF can have a variety of oxidation states. Okay? Why is MTX? Now, what does MTX? What does MTX stand for? Anybody know? Methotrexate. Why is that an anti-cancer compound? Right. In other words, it prevents the complete production of THF from folic acid, and that slows down cellular synthesis of DNA, which allows then the body, if it has a decent immune system, begin to attack the cancer. But there are many cancers that are never attacked by the immune system, no matter what, because they are basically self that's gone awry. It's a real problem. What's the nutritional requirements for folic acid in pregnant women and why? So I want you to give me the exact number for folic acid per day and tell me what happens if you don't get it. List the essential amino acids. Remember Private Tim?
Paul.
What that means. And I picked out two simple amino acids. I describe in detail the synthesis and catabolism of alanine and asparagine. All that is, the synthesis and catabolism are the same pathway, simply reversed, one for the other. The catabolism pathway is the reverse of the synthesis, or you could say the synthesis is reverse of the catabolism. Match the name and structure of the four physiologically active amines listed. I think I asked you to do that already. That's all I asked you to do. And then recall in detail the digestion and absorption of proteins and amino acids in the gut. So that last page of that particular overhead, there's all kinds of useful information that you need to commit to memory. Okay, then going on, we have the overview of a neuron structure and function. That's, and boy, someone had that out for me. You had that, was it that overview? Which, can I see that? This overview is this page, is this thing, where it's got this kind of diagram at the bottom. Okay? Overview. And includes, the Donen effect, nurtured his stuff and all that kind of thing. Excellent. Thank you. So, describe the sources of energy for the brain and neuron. Recall the structure, characteristics of a neuron. Identify the synaptic region of a neuron electron micrograph. Describe the four main types of glial cells. Compare and contrast the functional differences among astrocytes, oligodendrocytes, epidermal, and microglial cells. Do me a favor and cross out that epidermal cell. We didn't talk about it at all. How does this cell, so epidermal, ependymal, I guess it is. You can cross that out. How does the cell solve the problem of osmotic pressure that would swell the cell? Describe the events and actions that make up an action potential. That would be that nice diagram where the you see the channels opening and closing, and there's a graph that deals with the change in voltage and the change in conductivity of the various ions. The role of calcium in the creation of the transfer of action potential between nerve cells. Okay. You got to go? I'm sorry. Okay. All right, leave it early. Now, response to the... Now, this is not the one... We've not come to that one. See where it says responses of postsynaptic cell to neurotransmitters? That's the one that's coming up next. So there's nothing on that test. You can cross that out on the back page. It's on the back page. You can cross that one out. Chapter NC10, synaptic transmission and cellular signaling. That's this over... That's... that's this thing right here. And explain the experimental evidence for neurotransmitter in quanta, etc. I will post this overhead on this particular handout on the web, because there's a couple people who are not here, at least one I know. And so it'll be available for you there if you have any trouble. I've looked. I don't have a good test that matches this particular sequence. This is a little different sequence that we've had in previous years. So I don't have an old test that matches it. So I'm probably not going to be able to get you an old test for this. I'm sorry, but I'd give you one. It'd be so confusing you'd have to throw out half of it just to try to find the stuff that works. Yes? General mechanism of physical... Yes, that is probably correct. Yeah. Yeah. All right. This thing right here, right? The general mechanism of... We ended it at this... Hang on, about two-thirds of the way down the page. Is that correct? Yeah. And this is where the... I didn't get that on the review sheet. But you should be able to simply... I will hold you accountable for the checkmarked information. Is that all right?
Yeah.
All right. That should be sufficient enough. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We will see you on Monday. Have a great Sabbath.
Oh, yeah.
Go sign up for the soup supper. I was told by Grace to make it happen, or else I was going to get into real trouble.